Welcome to the Podcast Maneuver, the officially unofficial podcast from Picard on CBS All Access. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we just watched season one, episode four, titled Absolute Candor. I want you to be absolutely candid here. What'd you think?
Well, I'm going to open my opinion like a book and say that this continues to have a lot of good stuff in it, but it also had one of the more embarrassing scenes in Star Trek history, like a scene so awful I almost blacked out midway through it. Of course, I'm referring to the romantic Borg ice skating rink date that happened.
This the Borg version of curling? I think it is. Yeah.
I was thinking, like, it seems impossible that there isn't, in the entire span of the galaxy and the Borg's conquest of it, there's never been a Borg drone working in a maintenance shaft and just slipping and falling on it, just busting their ass wide open. Mm-hmm. That has to happen like every few weeks on a Borg cube. It just has to. And I'm just thinking these stiff ass space zombies struggling to get up and you know, they're like little servos whirring as it's trying, like a turtle on its back, to get up on a zero friction surface.
Yeah, like Wolf 359, right? Like they did some evasive maneuvers. You know, some Borg fell over.
Yeah.
You know it. And then they're sliding around. They're halfway through the battle. They can't get up.
Yeah, see that they don't know that Locutus, after Data got through to him, First, he's going to try sleep. If that didn't work, he had slip up his sleeve. He's just going to
sleep and slip.
He's going to simulate a signal to all Borg drones to report to the air shafts, and then they just never recover.
See, I think these are specially designed hallways. I think this is like the Olympics, essentially. This is a rink, you know. This is not just like, oh, it's a maintenance tunnel.
Yeah,
and it's greasy or whatever, and it happens to be something we can slide on. No, this is purpose built.
They got
for sliding
Zamborgies to go down and just make sure that the surface is nice and shiny and polished. Yeah, right. You know, there's also some good stuff. I think that one thing that I have to get used to with Star Trek is that every series gets to just reimagine the various, you know, demographics of the galaxy. Like, you know, Klingons in the old series were dudes wearing bronzer with like sculpt eyebrows. Mm-hmm. And then in the motion picture, they got the turtles glued to their foreheads. And they've been that way until you got to Disco, in which I don't know what they turned into. And like now the Romulans go around with like, you know, swords as sidearms, and they've lost the shoulder pads and that they've got a radical religious sect that's the opposite of them. But I guess that's kind of cool, because sometimes I feel like Star Wars is the other way, where like they're kind of like sometimes maybe too rigid in their, you know, like
the culture of an alien species is too homogenous or something.
Yeah, this gives them a little bit more flavor and color, but it is jarring to see these Romulans, you know, with the swords and sidearms and the ninjas and whatnot. But
it helps that it's the Romulans, because we didn't know too much about them to begin with. So like
they're always mysterious.
Yeah, like when they changed the Klingons in Disco, I was sort of disappointed, because I'm so familiar with the Klingons.
Right.
Like, for God's sake, one was on the bridge. Yeah. 24/7 in TNG. So.
Yeah, and imagine if like your only exposure to American culture was like naval officers.
Okay.
You know, like they're the way it's like, oh, you know, the Americans, they just wear these dark blue suits, except for some of them have these white deals, and they're always on these big, you know, you wouldn't. And then you go and you try to and see a punk or a goth or a cowboy, and you're like, what the fuck is this? What is this? I kind of get it. I like it, but there's I don't know. What'd you think?
I'm not as excited about this episode. It's the thing that I liked about this episode is going back and sort of seeing Picard struggle with his own actions over the last 14 years, where he tried to help these people.
Right.
He thought he did everything, but they view him as sort of giving up on them.
Right.
And I thought that was the most interesting, nuanced thing they did. The other stuff, continuing to assemble a team 4 episodes into a 10-episode run of this show, I don't know about that.
I think they're done either.
It doesn't feel like it.
Like Madox is still the last piece of the puzzle. Maybe he's like the
Yeah, he's got to be at the nest or something. I don't think they're going to find him until shit's
because so you think he's real. Like a MacGuffin or something they're actually trying to search for, or he's a quest objective rather than I mean, the thing is like, yeah, like what more crew do you need? You've got an emergency holograph for every conceivable function,
right,
including holosuite designer. So I know as I said, that's the thing. It's like, I'm not crazy about some of those ideas, but like it's baked into the show's DNA. Like you're going to get 20 different versions of Rios.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like a comedic effect. Like you're going to see a culinary emergency holograph when they get bored of eating the ship rations. You're going to see the janitorial emergency holograph for when Raffi overdoses on snake leaf. You're going to, it's there. That's just going to be what they're doing. There might be an emergency philosophical holograph for when Rios has an existential breakdown from all of the highfalutin philosophy he's reading in the cold darkness of space. Like, that is just going to be, you know, it's like getting annoyed at Data's gold skin. Like, if you don't like it, if you think it's a bad idea, then buckle up. You've got seven seasons of it. So I'm trying to embrace the Rios.
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with it. Like, the EMHs have always been sort of comedy relief in a lot of ways. Like, you look back at Robert Picardo's, whatever the fuck his name was, Dr. Something.
Right.
He was comedy relief most of the time.
He was a straight man type of comedy relief. And, you know, get to poke fun at the guy.
He was the butt of the joke.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't have a huge problem with that. It's more about, like, how much time are we going to spend assembling this crew, and when are we going to get down to the story? But I don't know. We'll see. Actually, I know what next week brings mostly, and it's ridiculous.
But kind of like in the way that like Star Trek sometimes gets, like, you know, I want to see them all beam down to the pimp planet with their pink suits and their long feathers and Captain Picard or Admiral Picard, JL
with his eye patch.
JL's dressed like a leather daddy space pirate. I can see that for sure.
Yeah, we'll see that next week. Okay, let's talk about this week. We start off with Picard visiting the relocation hub 14 years ago, and we're introduced to a young Romulan boy as well as the Kowat Milat, who are taking in Romulan refugees. And his visit is interrupted by a call from Raffi telling him that Mars has been attacked, and he leaves to take care of businesses, but promises that he will return and continue the mission. You know what they say about promises, those Romulan Kowat Milats.
Actually, I thought some of the philosophy here was kind of cool. Like
the prisons.
It's a prison. Don't be a jailer to another, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
That's kind of interesting. So a Romulan's kind of like, don't promise, either do or don't, you know, like shit or get off the pot.
Yeah. And it kind of falls in line with their, you know, over eager honesty sort of philosophy.
Where do you stink? Because like I read something 10 years ago about, it's called radical transparency, which sounds a lot like this absolute candor, which is these people. It's kind of like a transhumanist movement of like, we should tell the truth all the time, regardless of context. You know, like even the kind of white lies you might tell to spare a good friend or to soften
the
blow.
The James Holden strategy.
I don't know that there's a bad argument for that other than people don't know how to deal with hurt feelings, or they don't know. I don't know what is the argument against absolute candor.
I think it's only that one. Is that people would be upset by it. It's not the way we operate. It's not the way we think.
It also seems like that, like, does absolute candor apply to, like, government level? Because it seems like a society that practices absolute candor, like, in, like, a warfare or a negotiation session, would get fleeced by, like, a Ferengi or a traditional Romulan approach to secrecy and spycraft and... You know, you'd be easily exploitable. That's the other, you know, like everyone has to, and that's the ultimate condemnation. If you have a philosophy where everyone has to follow it rigidly or it falls apart, probably not a good philosophy.
Yeah. I mean, any of those extremes are silly. Like, we've talked about in the past, you and I know, just like extreme tolerance and how that can backfire on you when you run into an intolerant civilization or group of people.
Yeah, we have to tolerate these people who are rounding us up in the camps,
right?
Because, you know, to otherwise would be to not tolerate their intolerance. So, yeah.
And this is just a small sect, obviously, of Romulan society.
Yeah. I thought, so there's some, at some point someone calls Elnor Sister Boy, and I know he was kind of androgynous. I'm like, huh, I wonder, I guess now that I think about it, I wonder if they're still going to explore like him being some kind of androgynous or non-binary character.
Mm.
But it turns out it's just like, I guess they're, what do you call the sole male member of a sorority.
Yeah, they probably don't have a good term for that.
Right.
This seems like a extreme situation.
Yeah.
They wouldn't normally take in a young boy.
Yeah, if you have a young man with a bunch of nuns, mm-hmm. what would you call him? A nun boy?
Yeah, I guess
boy
so.
Boy nun?
Mm-hmm.
Because he's not a priest. I mean, I guess he would, yeah, he just, I don't know.
I don't know.
But I thought that was a pretty interesting, interesting idea. They got the... Man, Star Trek loves its classic literature, doesn't it?
Yeah, Three Musketeers in
there's,
here.
There's not been anything, nothing in the 20th century or the 21st
nope.
century, Jean-Luc. Star Wars?
No.
Like, he's wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be cool if, like, this kid grew up idolizing being a Jedi and Jedi Knights and using swords and stuff because Picard sold him on Star Wars?
Yeah, there'd probably be some licensing rights to work out with that might be sticky.
Yeah, but like, yeah,
but I feel you. Yeah.
Goddamn Walt Disney, you're right. That's the reason why Star Trek can't refer to anything in the 20th century.
The copyright has been extended for 300 years
right.
now.
Night of the Living Dead's the only thing that they can get because somebody, George Romero, fucked up the copyright on it.
Okay, we go over to present day on Rio's ship, and Jurati's annoying him with the discussion on how boring space is. Then Rafi comes in and she's pissed that Picard's making a stop off at Vashti.
Yeah, Alison Pill is just Sorkining. She's going full on Sorkin. This is straight. This is just her character from the newsroom monologuing without stop. I thought it was always weird in Star Trek how Picard had a bunch of paper books.
Mm-hmm.
And that was before like the omnipresence of actual data pads and Kindles and whatnot. What is the deal? Is like that, that just like is that a shorthand for this guy is cultured and deep?
Yeah, I think he's a collector.
Hmm.
You know, he's got these are relics to him.
Yeah,
and it just so happens that he can read them, but I think like they're important for their physicality.
Right.
To him,
I think it'd be cooler if they like you'd catch him doing like computer resume Alexander Dumas volume 3 and it would like the book would materialize on the table. Mm-hmm. Like you're not actually schlepping around trees and stuff, are we in the 24th century?
I mean, it seems like he is because like, he puts them in bags and carries them with him and
interesting.
Wraps them up in paper. Yeah, I think these are real books. That's just Picard. Picard's a guy.
They do a lot of. They do a lot of world building in this scene, too. They talk about, you know, this Kira sector, that they have this rangers. So I guess they're space rangers or some kind of apart from Starfleet defense force, kind of like a militia force.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of in the next half of the scene when she goes to confront him. But there is some stuff in here that they do with, like, Rios. He's only got Klingon opera on board. That's it.
He's cultured and deep.
Right.
I mean, they really want us to know this guy is hot.
It's on vinyl.
This guy's got...
he's just got a collection of 45s over in the corner.
Yeah, and he only plays it through a like an amplifier that uses vacuum tubes because you can't get that rich, warm sound through a holograph.
Hell no.
But he's deep. He's cultured. He's got an edge.
Mm-hmm.
He is... Fucking pulls metal out of his shoulder and bleeds in his shirts. He
drops the F-bomb again.
And he has an army of clones on his ship that drive him crazy, but he likes it this way because they're programs that he himself set up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
they annoy him in the right way.
He's complicated. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I shouldn't have researched what that book was about because they just come out and say it here in this episode. So shame on me, I suppose. And then, we get to the second half where Picard's on the holodeck and he's got an image of his chateau. And Picard's explaining that he's stopping at Vashti to hopefully pick up a Romulan warrior nun, which is strange.
Mm-hmm.
Rios warns that the sector is very dangerous with an old warbird stalking around. And Rafi tries to persuade JL to stick to the plan, but he knows that this might be the last time he's out this way, and he doesn't want to miss his opportunity to see his old friends one last time.
I don't understand why he doesn't. So is he actually here for a mission, which is like, I'm an old man and I can't do action scenes anymore. I can't even do the patented Kirk double hammer. I need somebody. Why doesn't he just say that instead of being like, hey, I just want to stop by for old time's sake?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both is the thing. Like, he wants to see these people, but also, yes, he very much needs a warrior in his party. I don't know. There is a lot of stuff here going on. And so I sort of got lost in it. Like, you talked about the Fenris Rangers. Mm-hmm. I think this is where I first heard the term Kuat Milat. I must have missed it in the first few scenes.
I think that he said something. They owe a debt to them for helping them relocate onto the Romulan, reclamation planet or whatever they're calling it.
And then this is where they explain the, way of absolute candor. It seems like he's sort of doing a nostalgia tour at the same time that he's picking up party members.
I'm saying this, like, you got a ship full of people who are skeptical of your motives. Like, if you have a motive, and that's what I'm saying, like, in Picard's mind, did he go down there just to kind of see and make amends, and then like, oh wow, they've got this like fucking badass warrior, and but he wanted that.
Yeah, he does.
So I don't know why. None of them seem like they're like the warrior type. Like even Rios doesn't.
Aware of his own death.
Yeah, exactly.
To be a warrior type.
he's paralyzed, but it's existential crisis.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd like to find more about these Rangers. I wonder if we're going to run into them this year. I was actually excited to see this antique bird of prey, but it seems like they dusted it off by the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And it's antique. This is like Star Trek, the old series bird of prey.
Yeah, I was expecting a little more curve to that bird of prey.
It's an old saucer.
Angular as fuck.
It's old saucer. It's just a saucer with two wings on it, man. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why Rios' ship can't outrun this old hunk of junk, but
I don't know.
Although I guess
it's
like
a big,
Rios
powerful
is,
ship.
Rios is kind of like still just a personal craft, or that's, maybe it's 100 years old, but it was a fucking capital ship of its day. Like, it's got fully operational sublight drives and whatnot. It just seemed like that ship was, Rios' ship was so much faster than it,
It's so much more maneuverable, certainly.
But maybe he's talking about like warp drive, like, I can't outrun it from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Do you think that this holographic recreation of the winery, the Chateau Picard, is going to be the new ready room? Like, anytime they need to discuss stuff or get philosophical, they call?
Maybe. I don't know. I got to see more of Rio's ship. I got to see what other compartments he's got.
Because it looks like it's just one big bridge / engine bay.
Yes.
There's a holodeck somewhere.
There has to be quarters,
right?
You don't take five people on a ship with no quarters.
What if you have like a 15 by 15 holodeck and everyone's quarters are just in there? Like, you don't know that you're only 18 inches from everybody else because it looks like it's a full room for you, and they've got tractor beams you around, and you just can, as long as everyone's got a room to stand and turn.
I mean, I guess that would work.
You can beam people in and out if they like start to walk through each other. Yeah, why not?
That would work.
That's the ultimate in hot bunking.
I'm not sure how I feel about this new crew as compared to the beloved crews of the past. There's a lot of conflict here. And I'm very used to like the crews of the Enterprise and the ships they're on being very much in lockstep with their views on things. Here, it's not that at all.
It's a lot of early season or early series Voyager, because you had like Federation terrorists and Vulcans and like edgy Klingons and all these people, like all washed out Federation officers, all like jammed in on the same bridge crew, and there was a lot of weird stuff there, but I guess that's the closest thing I can think of, because there's not even really a command structure in place. Like, there's already this kind of, does Rios resent Picard's like temerity of just ordering, or does it feel like he's home now, that he's like, oh, I was always meant to be a, like, is he a Riker type? Like, I was meant to be this man's first officer.
I don't know. I didn't get any like annoyance or anger from Rios when he steps in and tries to make it so?
It's a little. I thought there's a little. I mean, there wasn't not annoyance. It's more of just kind of like, well, I mean, what do you do? You got Admiral Picard on the bridge, and
yeah,
he's going to start barking orders. You know?
I read it more as confusion than annoyance. It was just like, oh, right. There are two. Like, I respect this guy very much, but I'm the captain of this ship, but he's used to being a captain. Like, it's just very confusing.
Mm-hmm. I do think they need to decide pretty soon, Dr. Girardi, if she's going to be like that full, because people treat her like she's just almost a ghost. Like, there's having yeah. conversations past her, and she's just like, what? And like, you know, someone read her in, okay? Yeah. And maybe she needs they need to get some kind of synth danger so she can her expertise can come into play, right? Because so far you got Raffi, yeah. She's like the spy master. Rios is the captain. Picard is Picard. You got the action ninja Romulan nun mm-hmm. boy, and then she's just there. She needs a competence. She needs to show her competence so the kind of merge her in with the crew. I think.
Yeah, I'm with you, but she's also the audience proxy. In a
That's
way.
True.
And how would we exposition dump if we didn't have her being somewhat ignorant of the situation?
I think they could use Picard, because like Picard was completely ignorant. That's another thing I'm kind of amazed at, just how complete Picard's abdication of his duties were. Like he leaves this nun Zanny on the surface of this world Vashti. And pledges, hey, you know, the synth attack, no big deal. I'm not going to let this thing fail. And I think he never comes back.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the kind of tail tuck between your legs and running that is jarring to me when it comes to Picard. And I've read a lot of people saying, well, you got to understand, this is a broken man. This is a man who, you mm-hmm. know, got assimilated by the Borg, got his sanity back by, you know, bonding with his family. Then his family all got burned to death in a structure fire on Earth. Then his, you know, Data is like kind of a surrogate son to him, and he got died. And so he's really conflicted, and he's got all these, but still, I hope that they get around in this series to telling the story of like Picard's kind of like coming to grips with like what a kind of Atlas Shrugged situation we got here,
mm-hmm.
Where he just completely. Not. I mean, it's like he took no interest in this at all. He had no idea what the galactic politics was of this era. He had no idea how like you know, criminal and desperate the situation had gotten.
Yeah,
it's kind of amazing.
So we got to the artifact, and we see an old recording of Ramda explaining what Ganmadan is, which is Day of Annihilation. She mentions the destroyer, and Soji's ears perk up. There's a lot of lore. There's a lot of shit that they're dropping on us this episode. Just a ton of it. Almost to the point where it was a little much for me. And if I weren't doing a podcast about this, I would have come out of this remembering none of it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it was so much.
It seems like the stuff they want you to remember is this destroyer, this, you know, like there's some kind of Romulan Armageddon that's Ganmadan.
Yeah, and we haven't even gotten to the other half of the Romulan stuff, the Kalon Kankai or whatever mm-hmm. the fuck it is,
mm-hmm.
The word with too many K's mm-hmm. sounds in it. Yeah, there's just a ton.
I really liked, this is starting to become maybe like the new bullet time, but that like Blade Runner holo effect where one person's holo face is overlaid on another, they kind of draw. They did that this last season in Watchmen where they had... Angela, you know, looking at a holograph of her father, and as it spun around, like their faces overlaid, and now you see this.
Oh, right, the tree.
Yeah, the tree, the acorn of ancestry. Yeah, that's what it was.
Ancestry.
I think that was pretty cool, mm-hmm. and you know, I think what I got from this is when they talk about all the shackled demons freed, I think they're talking about these unreclaimed Borg drones. And answer the call of the destroyer, like that's my theory right now. Is that what they're concerned about is Sophie, just like Lore and Data once upon a time led this cadre of unaffiliated Borg, freed Borg drones as an army. That could be, you know, you take the Borg and you have this large army, this powerful vessel, and it's under control of these synths. Like, what can they do? Like, we saw what they could do on Mars to a very powerful force, the Federation, the Starfleet, what could they do with the Borg cube and all these drones at their disposal? I think that's what they're going. Because otherwise, shackled demons, what
I mean, there's a kind of a lesser fulfillment in the synthetics breaking free of their chains.
I guess
attacking
that's true.
Mars, maybe. Yeah. Unless that's a Romulan thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the thing you talked about sounds a lot more interesting than... And it you know, that didn't end all life everywhere.
Right.
So I think there's a greater fulfillment here coming.
Yeah. Greater and lesser fulfillments. Got to love that with prophecies.
Uh-huh. All right. We are back on Rio's ship, which is called the Siren, La Serena. They arrive at Vashti and examine the defenses. They don't have clearance, and they mention... even the mention of Picard's name is not getting them through their defense system. Rios suggests a gift of cash, which apparently works.
Yeah.
Which I think Picard does, and it works, and he beams down.
He's bribe people. You're
cash?
Right.
Huh? What cash does Picard carry?
I don't know. Like, that's the thing that...
Gold-pressed latinum? Does he have just cases that he carries around with him, like books? He gave him Three Musketeers. He gave him a copy of Three Musketeers.
Yeah, the first edition, Dumas. I don't know, man, because, like, one of the... I do this political podcast on the Swizzbold Network, and I had this whole theme of, like, you know, trying to go to a Star Trek age where, like, what we're trying to aim for in humanity should be a Star Trek-style utopia. Mm-hmm. Post-scarcity, post-currency, post-class. And Star Trek Picard is doing its damnedest to not only find all the problems with that, which is the fact that the Picards have this massive chateau on Earth, mm-hmm. which seem and there's this family of wealth and privilege and prestige, but they're also introducing a whole bunch of new stuff. Like, and I get it. Like, you know, you're always going to have, like, the Romulans. Maybe they don't roll that way. Maybe they still, and you've got these you know, these backwater towns, kind of like when the Jedi go out to Tatooine, and the Republic credits are no good here. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem like it is ever a problem. Like, what would Rios have in a post-currency society? You know, like, what did it mean when Raffi said that she was living in a hovel? Mm-hmm. You know, she lives in a Aerostream trailer and wants for nothing in a national, like, what looks like a national monument park. Oh. Like, is that poverty in the Federation?
She claims it is.
And then you look at this planet, which is supposed to be like this wretched, you know, planet desperation, and I don't think they told that story very well. Nothing, like, there wasn't, like, they talk about how much crime there is, but, like, it didn't seem like there was crime. There's Romulans walking around with, like, I guess Romulan Nazi bands on it, but, like, nothing seemed particularly dangerous. There was, like, you know, this anti-human chauvinism, but that seems entirely understandable given the circumstances.
Yeah. So, and, like, how often do humans come out there anyway? Like,
yeah, well, I mean, they talk about, like, the nuns, when Picard's talking to them, talk about how they've been helping both Terrans and Romulans. So I guess they're sharing this planet? Like, was this a Terran?
Okay.
Yeah.
That would make more sense, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, are they, like, a small refugee population that gets shafted? But again, what is the desperation? Where's the dirty, the disease, the people living quiet lives of desperation? I don't know.
I mean, it just looked like an upgraded version of every less civilized planet, less developed planet you see in TNG, right? It wasn't made out of cardboard and spray foam, But it had that same vibe to
but
it.
People weren't wearing, like, threadbare clothes, and no one looked like they
not
were
so
malnourished.
Much,
yeah. The senator looks like he eats 15,000 calories a day because he's got the bulk of three men.
He's,
like,
lost 200 pounds in the last 14 years.
Yeah. He used to, like, do Romulan sumo,
right?
Which is a thing. Totally is a thing.
Absolutely. It's called kokaye kie.
Yeah, and, you're right.
Yeah.
Sounds Hawaiian. It's weird, but, you know.
Where was I? Yeah, so he beams down. He's not received with much hospitality. However, it's a different story when he goes to see his old friends. They welcome him in, and he asks for Rami?
Oh, Elnor? Who are you talking about?
No,
oh, Zani is the head nun.
Asks for her help, and Elnor shows up. I appreciate that Star Trek named one of their elves Elrond. That's a nice touch to me.
Sure, yeah. Of the elder race of Romulans, sure.
Right?
And they even had the pointy ears.
They have the ears, the eyebrows. They got it all.
Space Legolas, right here.
Yeah,
it's kind of ridiculous. They raise the issue of what is he going to do when it comes to ranged combat? Mm-hmm. Because a guy at the end's like, "Yo, I like to see your sword stop this disruptor." Are they going to give him a space bow and arrow?
Oh, no. I hope not.
I mean, because it is a problem in a world of phasers where those are a thing. Mm-hmm. And you can just kind of hose a whole room down with stun fire. What are you going to do about that?
Yeah. How many blaster bolts can he block with that sword?
I mean,
this isn't Star Wars, right? Where like you got the Jedi who fight with the lightsabers.
That's what I'm saying. Star Wars, they got these warrior monks that do melee, but they also have magic powers, so they can choke you across the distance. They can run super fast. They can jump super high. And oh, by the way, they can block up to AT-AT walker fire with their laser sword. So what is this guy going to have?
It seems like he's got a lot of spin moves.
That's true. That's true. But I don't know if that spin move is going to set. The transporters are what saved the day. And this is
He's got a personal transporter that he just closes the distance.
That would actually be fucking cool.
Why wouldn't
you do that? Like a point-to-point transporter where he can just like...
It's like two uses per battery life. It's like...
Oh, and then you got like the Spider-Man thing where it's like Spider-Man can swing from webs, but he runs out of web fluid. Like, you know, you can, like, he's got a magic power, but it's got a limit that you can understand and
do it.
Things are getting desperate. There you go. I wonder if they thought of those things.
Probably not. Okay, let's move on to the artifact where Soji's watching over a sedated Ramda. She tells Narek that she felt seen by Ramda, and he says, "Oh, I see you too." Then they go to a bar where Soji expresses her mistrust of him, and he decides, "I'm going to prove myself by taking her to participate in a Borg ritual, which involves sliding down a hall in socks." We kind of talked about this. It is truly ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really bad. And I'm like, the thing is, they're on a Borg cube, and they also have the disadvantage in that in their plot, she's been there for years. So it's not like he can take her to some kind of vast Borg cavernous chamber or take her to the edge of the force field and like look at the black. There's very few opportunities for a romantic encounter on the Borg ship. Mm-hmm. Even still, maybe keep working. Maybe just have an insert romantic scene here and, you know, go on, write the rest of the episode. You got a couple weeks before they start shooting. Come up with, like, is there, like, something? I don't know, but I don't know what you do because the Borg ships are famously not a romantic location.
Right. You can get into one of their recharging chambers.
Sure.
Shut a door or something around that.
I don't know. Maybe he could, like, I'm trying to think of, like, she's a scientist and she's like, insatiably curious. Like, maybe he has the key to, like, the Borg, like, species archive, or she could find out a whole bunch of knowledge that no one else knows. I don't know, but, like, this ain't it. I just know what it's not, and it's not sliding down a Borg air shaft in your socks and then making out with it.
There is some stuff I like in this scene when she talks about feeling like she was seen. And, you know, he sees her too, but that's in totally different ways, right? And, kind of in the same way, but different purposes.
And you can feel the tension between, you know, his sister Rizzo or whatever the hell her name, like putting pressure to like go fast. And her being a smart person of her own agency, like, the fuck, dude, how do you know so much about me? This is coming off as like kind of like, are you a vampire from Seattle? Like, why are you so up in my personal business? Why are you taking such an interest in me? And the way he pivoted that to, like, I'm the same as you. I'm just feeding an insatiable curiosity. Mm-hmm. I thought that, you know, and the fact that he's got things he's hiding from her, but she's got things that are mysterious or she's hiding for him.
Yeah, that she maybe, that she doesn't know about, but she's, like, on the edge, right? And that's where I feel the tension. That's why, I guess, the scene toward the end with Rizzo and Narek almost worked for me, even though it's not good.
There's some problems there too.
Yeah, it's a very weak scene, but it ties into this scene interestingly because she's got this subconscious line where if they cross it, she's going to activate. And we've seen what that looks like with Dodge, right?
Yeah.
And that is the thing that they need to prevent. And that's the thing where if they push her too fast, they say that'll happen.
What are they trying to do? Get her to realize that she's a robot and that she's there against her will and turn her?
I think she
activates, and then if she activates, then it's a big problem.
Like earn her trust, and then when push her slowly into activation.
Because he's planting seeds of like, because I don't think, like you said, I don't think she's aware. Like she's got memories of coming over here in this transport, yet she wasn't. I do have a lot of like, who put her there?
Yeah.
Like what is the, who, it's got to be.
And the
this,
Romulans want to know too.
It's got to be this nest of synth. It's got to be some kind of like, what was that game we played? Detroit Become Human, where you had like underground collection of like illegal synths.
Living on a big boat.
Yeah, they've got to have something like that where they have put a deep sleeper agent in this place to, I don't know, maybe they are planning on using the Borg as their personal army.
That would be cool.
There's a lot of exciting possibilities. And I like what they're doing. It's just like, man, they should really cool, like the Borg skating rink and the sister who's trying her best to be a fucking Lannister.
Yeah.
Pare some of that shit down because, yeah, the emotional conflict here and the stakes and the objectives they're trying to do, I think, are kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. All right, so word of Picard's presence is spreading on Vashti, and Raffi's getting worried. Apparently, Kar Kantar is headed their way. They spot him in the Warbird, but Picard won't leave.
That's a space pirate that we don't really know anything about, just that he's got an old bird of prey. Yeah,
yeah, it's the guy from the Star Wars universe who's come over, Kar Kantar.
Yeah.
Instead, he speaks with Zani about poor conditions on Vashti, and she says that Elnor has no home and suggests that Picard take him along on the mission. And this is where we learn about the Kallan Kakai.
Mm-hmm. Which is a bound blade in the service of a lost cause, I guess.
Yeah, which I thought they had explained to us pretty well. But then later on, they explain it again, I guess for the benefit of the crew.
I think the lost cause is what we didn't. We didn't know what the criteria for the mission is. And then that's like a nice little sick kind of ominous, like, oh, we're on a suicide mission. That's why they joined us.
I start to think then about, okay, what does an order of warrior nuns that only accepts the most hopeless of missions look like 200 years after it's developed? It's probably gone, right? Like if they're only sending out their warriors to go on missions that are against all odds.
Because like the Faceless Men in Game of Thrones is kind of like that, where like, but they extract a huge price. And if like you're poor, they might take your firstborn life, or they might take them into their service, or if you're rich, it just might just be like a extremely expensive fee. But that is what if you're just doing this out of kindness of your heart? Maybe they're that badass that they actually having a Kallan Kakai, Kallan Kaki, Kallan Kaki, having a Kallan Kaki member Kallan on Kakis. on your side is something that's powerful enough to swing a cause.
I don't know how.
Or maybe small scale shit too. Like they don't ever get involved in like galactic issues. It's more of like, hey, this guy stole bread from me. I need someone to go get it back so I can feed my family. Okay, well, yeah, having a peerless blade on your side might help.
They better have those personal teleporters, because otherwise the odds are not in their favor.
Yeah. But also, I felt like they didn't do a very good job of selling the poverty of this planet, even though they're talking about it. But then also Picard allowing the perfect to become the enemy of the good. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's a lesson on like 7 different Next Generation episodes, like how that can go awry. And it's just so weird to hear this old Picard say like, I couldn't see it. The fact that
I thought you meant on the actual episodes themselves. What? Like the writing of the episodes.
Oh no,
you're talking about the lessons he's learned
I think that was like the moral lesson of like 7 different episodes in the Next Generation, and yet Picard's like, yeah, you're right. If I couldn't save everybody, then I'd not try to save anyone. It's a nihilist and hubris streak that I didn't see coming from him. And like again, I'm keep waiting for him to pay some kind of price for it.
Yeah, we'll see. So I got 6 more episodes, I think. Picard then tells Elrond the story about his mission. Because Picard abandoned him years ago, Elnor refuses to go with him.
Yeah, it's funny because my wife, Cecily, wanted us to... She suggested we call the spot watch. Because she's really enamored with Data's cat Spot.
Oh, okay.
And I said, there's no fucking way that cat is ever going to come up on the show. We would have fulfilled the name of the podcast because episode 4 first spot reference.
Yep, it's true.
And I think cats, it's like I kind of want to see a 24-year-old spot cat. Like you can get a cat living that long.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially with 24th century veterinarian technology.
That's true.
Come on.
Yeah,
cats are living longer every day. You get DNA sequencing and holotherapy.
Yeah, we could see a holographic spot on the holodeck.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Could also, see that.
Yeah, I want to see Data Spot.
All right, then we're waiting for a window to beam back up, and Picard strolling the town, and he causes a scene by entering a Romulans only restaurant, and a former Romulan senator is holding Picard's promise to help them against him for giving up. Picard is given a sword. He refuses to fight. So Elnor steps in and cuts the head off the senator, and they're beamed down in the nick of time. And then Picard, when they're back on the ship, says, "Hey, don't fight anymore.
Don't
do the thing I brought you here to do anymore unless
people.
I tell you to."
Yeah. I love Picard striking the on guard pose from like that Robin Hood episode of TNG. Like he's like, you know, going to fight this old school fight. He does a pretty credible parry of this guy, because this guy stands up. I call him in my notes Senator Camacho, because this guy is just built like a brick shit house. And as I was watching this the first time, I'm like, there's going to be a fight scene, because there's no way you cast this muscular stunt man in this role as this Romulan senator unless he's going to have to fuck some shit up by the end of it. And of course, that's exactly what happens. What's Picard doing here? Is he suicidal? Is he like, well, I'm Picard, and maybe I couldn't get this sister done on my side, this sister boy on my side, but like I'll get one of these Romulan toughs with a sword, and they'll be just as good? Or was he doing this because he thought that the Elnor would follow him, and he would have so much reserve esteem for this man who abandoned him 14 years ago that he would stick up for him? Like, what was the actual plan? Because I know what happened, because the writers wrote it that way.
I don't know that he had a plan. I think he was sulking. I think, like, he realized he had fucked up, both personally with Elrond and also, you know, on the Romulan rescue operation scale. Yeah. On a galactic scale. So, like, I think what he's doing here is touring this town going, these are the mistakes I've made. Mm-hmm. And when he sees this Romulan's only sign, you know, his arrogance, his sense of what's right kicks in, and he's compelled to go in there and, you know, try and set at least one situation right.
Hmm.
Doesn't work out for him. It's only the sheer coincidence, or not the coincidence, but the luck that Elrond shows back up.
Yeah, I mean, because the thing is this Romulan senator has him dead to rights. Like, we can see it. Like when he was talking about, like, you can see Picard giving that speech and like getting like moving everyone to tears because of the Federation's plans for assistance and help, and then they just abandon. And also like how these Romulans have turned it in their heads is like, you know what? This was a plot by the Federation. If we thought we were going to be on our own, we have our Romulan pride and ingenuity and resourcefulness, but you gave us the easy out and we thought we trusted you. And like,
and in a moment of weakness, and then you scattered us to the winds.
It's an easy conspiracy
theory.
And you
broke up our entire species. Like, yeah. Yeah, it's actually a pretty nuanced, interesting take on the whole thing.
But it's funny because, like, I associate, like, this scene to me was like, you know, Samuel L. Jackson in Unbreakable when he's at his low point and he's in that comic book store and he's just being an asshole. He doesn't care if he gets arrested. He doesn't care if he gets hurt, because he just doesn't care anymore. And it's weird that Picard's got a whole crew up there that he knows has a bird of prey bearing down on them and all these. And he's just like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to maybe get my ass kicked. I might get killed.
He's got 7 minutes he's got to kill here,
I guess. Yeah.
So, you know, why not start a potential scuffle?
Right. Get a civil war going. It was a sick action scene, though.
Yeah. I was actually impressed with the moves.
The neck slice was wild. Mm-hmm. The whole, like, you know, hey, choose life, like to be that badass to know, you know, like, hey, is this guy, if you challenge you know, what is it, the Colin khakis, if you challenge a Colin khaki, you're gonna die.
Yeah,
like, it just, that's the way it goes. Mm-hmm. Unless he's got a disruptor pistol, which I still would like to know.
I would too.
He's gotta have, I bet if he did wasn't beamed out, he would have blocked it or something. We're gonna see this guy reflect a disruptor with that blade.
This could be a teaser.
Yeah.
Okay, then Rizzo wakes up Narek and puts more pressure on him to make faster progress on Soji. She reminds him that Soji has a plan and that she's the destroyer, and she says he has one more week until she resorts to torturing the info out of her.
This is the clumsiest throat choke I've ever seen. Like, there's two points during the process where she actually loses their grip.
Oh, no.
And he's not even being choked, and he's still... because, you know, it's just an awkward thing that they're trying to do.
Choking someone and asking them questions, asking them to answer questions is always ridiculous in my mind.
Yeah, and it's, you don't need a physical threat. This guy's like committed to the mission. I don't know. It makes her look. They want me to think that she's Queen Cersei, that she's literally just kind of mad with power and she's bad at her job and all she knows how to do is threaten and intimidate. That's like literally she's just one dimensional, because that's the thing I'm getting from her character. And
yeah,
I don't think it's scary. I don't think it's, I don't know. That's what I don't understand, because like this Narek guy has got some depth, and they established that he's been studying like cybernetic life his entire life.
Yeah.
So like this is his first chance to get, but like it seems like he's doing it in a capacity of this extremist Romulan faction that hates cyborgs. Mm-hmm. But his first chance to get one, and he's like fallen in love with it. It's weird. Maybe that's why she doesn't like him and distrusts him.
Maybe I was not reading that deep into this scene, and I think it's just like this scene is a symptom of the type of story they're trying to tell here. They're telling a story where nothing is happening. They're making no progress on their mission, right? That's inherently a difficult story to tell compellingly.
Yeah.
Because you're supposed to be impatient in these scenes. You're supposed to go get to the fucking point with this stuff.
Right.
I don't know. I maybe you shouldn't tell those kinds of stories because, man, they're boring.
Well, the other thing is they're handicapped because they wanted to have Dodge be revealed and killed in the first episode, which gives you some stakes. But it also completely kneecaps Rizzo. Is it Rizzo?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's coming like if this was a threat, like, okay, look, you know, we're trying it your way because it's the quiet, stealthy way. But like, I've always got my team of Romulan badasses that can come in here. But she's already taken that shot. She's already shot her shot and completely
a few times.
Yeah, completely fallen on her face with it. Mm-hmm. So it's like every time she threatens, like, oh, it's your way or my way. Well, your way's already failed.
Yeah.
And like they also haven't established like the ticking time bomb. Like, why is it a week? What happens in a week? Is it just like, you know, this person has been in this installation? Is that the other thing? Is we're supposed to understand that she's actually gotten here recently?
I don't know. I honestly couldn't tell you when she got here. They'd mention a ship that she came on and she wasn't on the manifest, but
that was like years ago. When was that? So like I feel like she's been here for years, so like why is it just now? Like it's fine for the show to play some cards close to its vest, but a lot of me being invested in like, well, of course they have to do it this way because I have to understand the stakes. I think the stakes are if these synths wake up and they decide that all biological life is inimical to them, then they're going to kill everybody in the galaxy.
Right.
But like, why? What's the urgency? You know, why is everything happening now? And I still don't understand that.
I'm also not sure how they could kill everybody in the universe.
If they hijacked a Borg to do so, like the Borg's almost done it several times.
If they could, yeah.
If the Borg step up, just get the Admiral Janeway out of retirement. She knows how to.
Yeah.
She can fight four or five Borg cubes at a time.
Right.
With a Federation scout ship. What the? Yeah. Give her a couple of those dreadnoughts.
Heavily modified
happens.
Federation scout ship.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
She can do more with a variable warp field geometry starship than anybody can, let me tell you.
All right, so Picard and crew are pursued by the Warbird. Another ship shows up to help, and the other ship is destroyed. They do manage to destroy that Warbird as well, though.
Or at least handy, like it's like out of commission.
Yeah, they cut off one of its nacelles.
Yeah.
So it can still fire, though.
Yeah.
Not sure why they're not more worried about that in the moment.
Right, yeah.
Maybe some more evasive maneuvers are called for, but they beam the pilot of the destroyed ship aboard, and oh boy, it's 7 of 9.
I would love to know how she got here. Like, I guess they established that Picard, like, what? Maybe she's a ranger. She's one of them Fenris Rangers. Okay.
I don't know.
That's all you need to say. She needs to have a cool ranger patch on her shoulder, and I'm in.
Yeah, and if weird Borg shit is going down, I think she would
She'd
want,
have a vested
she'd
interest.
Have some interest in that, yeah.
Especially if that vest has a Fenris Rangers patch on it. I'm in.
And if it's skin tight.
This one's 51 years old, BT Dubs.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Jerry Ryan still got that all 7 of 9s firing.
Yeah. It's all about the prosthetics.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what gives you that 7 to 9 quality. Prosthetics mm-hmm. and the lipstick.
Nanites don't crack.
Yeah.
Because they're constantly repairing your body at the cellular level. Uh-huh. So what do you think about the emergency gunnery hologram that shows up in the middle of a crisis drunk and speaking a language that presumably... Well, here's the other thing. Are universal translators not a thing? Like, what does it
Maybe
mean?
Maybe not on the ship. Maybe not.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
They on got a Galaxy class or Excelsior class cruiser or whatever the hell, sure. But
yeah, but this guy comes. He's drunk and he's speaking Spanish, and he's insolent and not following orders. Again, because this is the way the guy wants it. I think.
Yeah, he wants a surly, sort of rebellious. Security officer.
What I hope they're doing is there's gonna be an emotional episode late in the season where you find out whatever disaster that this guy was involved of this being an exo of a dreadnought, like you're gonna understand that these are all like versions of the crew that he lost, and they
who
all
the
have,
fuck was the drunk helmsman?
Or gunner. Like all these guys are going to be part of the starship, and that this is kind of like his. Now it doesn't make sense.
I don't
that,
think you can be that drunk on the bridge of a Starfleet vessel.
Well, then maybe that's why the Starfleet wrote him out of their archives.
Also, like, aren't they drinking synthahol? You don't get drunk from that anyway.
You can, but then it's immediately be dis. I think the effects are immediately dismissible.
Yeah,
by conscious effort.
Yeah, just. Doesn't line up, but it would be cool.
Yeah.
Maybe he's on some, like, I mean, he wasn't Starfleet, right? They've established that. So
yeah, he's just disgraced somehow.
Maybe that's then... him. Maybe that was him. It's the old version of him, just a drunken, sloppy.
He was the first officer, though. So like,
yeah, maybe that was before his promotion.
Yeah, I don't know. There maybe it's this the Lieutenant Starfleet Commander. Special Forces, because those guys are always famously lacking discipline. I did like to see the old school Star Trek bob and weave. You know,
the inertial dampeners on this ship are weak.
That they always are. I love. And Patrick Stewart's like, man, it's been. He probably thought he was these days were all over until he got the phone call. Now he's doing the. You know,
hell
we should
do
some of that on our little bridge, our bridge set, you know.
I'm pretty sure there's a warbird behind us somewhere chasing us down.
Oh, yeah. We need to be. Yeah. If we get into season two, I need to be able to take this thing in a red alert. I need to be able to do Picard maneuvers and take evasive action.
Yep.
I need to fire Riker pattern Alpha 3 full photon torpedo spread.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we got to get that. Season two, we're going to get a bigger budget. Gonna have even more emergency medical emergency podcast host holograms.
Oh, God.
All right, 7 of 9.
Yeah, that's it. We gotta wait till next episode to see what's gonna go down with that.
Do you think that Jerry Ryan's gonna be the rest of? Is she gonna be a member of the crew, or is she gonna be
probably? Like she's got nowhere to go at the moment.
If they establish her as part of this Finnish Ranger outfit, then it does give her an excuse to like, you know, get back to that because you've got this portion of the galaxy to secure or whatever. But yeah, it seems like she's going to be at least through the next episode.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be cool. Okay, you ready to do some feedback?
Yeah.
If you'd like to send us feedback, you can do so. Our hailing frequencies are open at picard@baldmove.com. First up, Micah and several others. Says, I'm probably not the first to mention it. You were, Micah. You were the first one. But there's a brief reference to the jail nickname at the beginning of the 3-part Picard prequel comic series, which takes place in an undefined but presumably short time before the Mars attack. Picard is still in Starfleet and in command of a ship called the Verity. Raffi is his first officer, and the first time we see her, we get the following exchange. She's a lieutenant commander... but the first officer to an admiral?
Did the commander get killed?
I don't know. You have to read the comic book, damn it.
Yeah.
And it's essentially just a brief exchange where she comes in, calls him JL, and he observes, you're never going to call me admiral again, are you? And she says, formality is the enemy of efficiency. Also, I know you enjoy it. And he says, debatable, and that's it. So 14 years of this familiarity. Well... I guess it hasn't been 14 years because they also established that they haven't spoken since he gets he drums himself out of Starfleet.
Yeah.
So and Micah says the nickname issue isn't touched further upon, but the fact that she's been calling him that for 15 plus years explains why he doesn't bristle. The comics also explain how the two Romulans who live in the vineyard first meet Picard. He and Raffi go to a small Romulan planet to evacuate what they think are 10,000 Romulans. When they go there, they find that there's also around 5 million non-Romulan natives who the Romulans use as slaves and are content to have die in supernova. Those damn Romulans. The Federation could feel superior to them, except for they abandoned them to die after their ships got broke by a bunch of robots. So
right.
Let's not get too high on our Starfleet horse here. After Picard balks at just evacuating the Romulans, they imprison him and temporarily commandeer his ship. The two Romulans from Picard, who are both Tal Shiar and who are on shaky ground with the agency because they fell in love, end up rescuing Picard and Raffi and siding with him over to Tal Shiar and other Romulans. They aren't safe in Romulan territory as a result, and Picard offers them sanctuary at his place on Earth. I don't know. Like, what do you... I'm kind of dim on the idea of relying on out-of-canon information to, like, inform my views. Like, it's fine to be supplement, but, like, the JL thing, I think, is, like... seems like it's a big core character issue. It's something that doesn't jive with my understanding of Picard. And It's weird to have to reference a comic that doesn't really explain it. They just lampshade it. Mm-hmm. Like, why couldn't they do that in the actual episode?
Yeah, I appreciate you writing in with this information, but don't expect me to read a comic book to understand what the show is trying to tell me.
Yeah, I just need a Picard to be like, do you have to call me that? Like, just register that the old Picard would have been annoyed at that, and maybe he's loosened up, whatever. But, like, yeah, like, this scene should have been in the series if they wanted me to kind of roll with it, I think. The two Romulans, like, I don't know. Like, that's the kind of information that's fine to put in the comic books.
Yes.
Because I understood everything. I understood their Tal Shiar. I understood they had a relationship. I understand that they go way back. I didn't know why Picard's sheltering them on Earth, but it seems like you'd have to put them at Romulans everywhere if their homeworld blew up. So,
yeah,
that kind of stuff's fine. But, like, the jail stuff, I wish that was in the episode. So let's move on to Eric. Two episodes of him assembling his crew, and yet not one of them points to him and says, "You son of a bitch, I'm in." Lame. Yeah, that would have been nice. That would have been nice. Jesse, I've rewatched now, and I can't understand why Laris and Zaban. Is it Zaban?
Dude, somebody pronounced it Chiban this episode.
Yeah, the emergency hospitality holograph said Chiban.
Is that just like the way you pronounce it if you're from Venezuela or wherever the Rios dude is from?
See, I thought back in the day that names used to follow, like, they had a Klingon linguistics guy, and you know, when people got new names, it's like, you know, you wouldn't have like a Klingon named Charlie.
Sure.
You know, they all, and like Spock, and you know, they all had like names like that, or Sarek, or T'Pol, or T'Pring, or whatever. I don't know, like, I wonder if, like, at some version that he was Chiban, and then someone came in and said, you can't do that, and it was shot out of order, so now you've got Laris and Zaban, but...
Yeah. Different people are saying it differently.
Yeah.
It's confusing to me.
He's pronouncing it with a holographic accent. Anyway, I've rewatched it now, and I can't understand why Laris and Zaban don't join Picard on his quest. I mean, aren't the Romulans in dark clothing going to keep beaming in and attacking? Or isn't Starfleet security Vulcan lady going to come after them if those aren't already the same? Is there an important grape harvest coming up? Who's going to make Picard's bed, and won't he miss number one? I mean, I don't understand why these guys aren't on the mission either. It seemed like they were willing to, and like, if the only reason is, yeah, you got to get the grape harvest in, like, there's robots for that shit, it seems like.
Yeah, there's certainly robots for some of it.
What's Geordi doing? If you can't get him to, you know, like, maybe you feel bad about sending him on this, but like, hey, I want to go on a long tour of the galaxy. Could you come over and watch my grapes for me?
Mm-hmm.
You just really need to hit a button every day to make the robots go out and do their thing. Yeah. But
they're staying to take care of number one.
But why can't number one be on the ship? Like, I think that'd be cool, too. Like, if Picard has both a Romulan ninja and like a John Wick style combat attack dog.
Yeah.
Pretty sweet. Ginny, your comments last week about Bad Trek and lobbing all sorts of storylines and ideas at the series to see what stuck prompted me to go back and start TNG from the beginning. That is quite the palate cleanser, and will prepare you for almost any amount of ridiculousness that is in Picard.
When I started watching, I started at season 3.
Yeah, same. And it still, there's some ridiculousness.
Oh, yeah.
She says, Krivins, but the encounter at Farpoint is awful. I'm kind of fascinated watching it again, knowing what great things came of it. But geez, the TV execs must have had a crystal ball or something. Or did they? I guess for late 80s, it's on the money, and also heavily using the original series tone and feel to benchmark the style of the reboot. So much so that many dresses from the female characters had to wear in the 60s series catapulted into the 80s, including it would seem on this fine strapping man. Now, she sent me a screenshot, and there are indeed, in the first episode of Star Trek, dudes wearing the Uhura-style miniskirt and mm-hmm. go-go boot uniform.
Mm-hmm.
So just to give you a background on that, I must confess I did a double take. Not that a dude can't wear a dress. I'm totes 101% behind that. It's just enormously progressive for an 80s American TV show, is it not? Or am I remembering the era differently? No, it totally is.
Progressive shit in Star Wars.
That's Roddenberry.
Star Trek.
That's Roddenberry, man. He like believed this shit.
Man, that's the thing. The more I go back and I watch TNG mm-hmm. and I watch the new stuff like Disco and this, thinking, man, Roddenberry was just such a massive part of the guidance of those shows.
Yeah, he's like, he like felt bad about, he probably, I bet, tons of women wrote him in and said, why the fuck a miniskirts? Why the fuck a miniskirts? Why the fuck a miniskirts? And he's like, you know what? I can't change the old series, but what I'll do is show that it's just a very uniform variant and men and women can wear it because why the fuck not? Yeah. This guy's got nice legs. He's got toned arms. He's going to be walking around in a short sleeve dress with go-go boots on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cool. Now, eventually, I think those things go away. They don't really commit to it.
Yeah, I thought I'd seen a couple.
I did a search. I think there's like four instances of dudes wearing miniskirts, and I don't think there's any past like season two. But have you seen one?
I did go back and watch the end of season two, so maybe that's where I saw them.
Okay, because this one it happens in Encounter at Farpoint when they're evacuating the families to the. To the saucer section to attach it. This guy, he's walking around in there. So,
and then like Picard and Riker are wearing sort of dress uniforms that are similar, but with pants.
But the pants are almost like a hose.
Hosiery.
Yeah,
it's a what I would call like a more traditionally feminine style.
So she wonders, did you spot them when you did your rewatch? Am I making too much of a deal of this? Or is this her way of saying, hey, we're in the 24th century. This is how we roll. I think Roddenberry, I don't know why he did that, but I'm sure it's probably that because maybe Deanna wore that micro mini a lot in early seasons.
Yeah.
And maybe it's less like a bunch of women wrote him in, but like, hey, I can't get away with this anymore. So you know what? If I want my attractive, you know, Greek actress mm-hmm. in like all this leg showing stuff, I better do it to the men too, or I'll be.
Make sure that for 90% of the time she's wearing a dress that shows off her cleavage.
Right.
Like it was jarring to me the other day. I watched an episode where there was some. So Riker was being tricked by the Romulans, or it turned out this kid or whatever who was on this planet and he thought it was the Romulans, but at first he thought he had been in a coma for like 18 years or something.
Yeah.
And Deanna Troi and Admiral Picard at that point, mm-hmm. she was like his first officer or something like that.
Yeah.
And she was wearing a uniform, just mm-hmm. a straight up uniform. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Yeah. I think in like season 5 or 6, she becomes part of the bridge crew. She like passes her command test and starts wearing a uniform and maybe even has a rank or something.
I'm not there yet. I'm still in the cleavage
phase. It is weird because like even like, do chaplains in like the army hold a formal rank like the priests?
I don't know.
I know they have uniforms. I always thought it was weird that the counselor just wore like a jumpsuit.
Yeah.
You know, like she sometimes wears like a Federation miniskirt. Mm-hmm. And then when she's not, she's wearing this weird mauve skin tight 7 of 9 outfit. But it's all because you want to see, you know, Miss Sirtis's nice body.
Of course.
So anyway. It's enlightened, but only to a point.
Absolutely.
Maybe we can see Picard in a miniskirt.
It's
next episode. It's our closest a leather miniskirt and high heels. I want to see it.
Hell yeah.
All right. That's all we got for feedback. Again, if you'd like to send us some, you can do so. Picard@baldmove.com. That's it for us this week. We'll be back next week to see. I'm setting my expectations basement. I've already seen the outfits. I'm there for the outfits. There's going to be a lot of like Star Trek attempts at humor, which, you know, are not going to be sophisticated.
How many times have they beamed down to a planet in Star Trek looking like fools?
I mean,
looking ridiculous.
Yeah, like, have you got to it yet or not? The Q episode where he turns them all into Robin Hood figures, and Worf is wearing is Will Scarlet, and he's wearing these red tights, and he says, "Captain, I must protest. I am not a merry man." Like, that's yes. That's what I'm there for.
Yes, I have. Is that also the same episode? So Barkley did also a holodeck episode where he had recreated all of the captain and first officer, all that is like Three Musketeers, and right? Fighting them, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's not that one, but okay. it's a similar energy.
I think I've got to that one, yeah.
All right, well, we'll be there for the Pimp Planet next week on Star Trek Picard. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.